I am an island, and there is no limit to the number of bridges and tunnels I can make. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. I am an island, and there is no limit to the number of bridges and tunnels I can make. We are unique. We are very special. We are very wonderful. And because we're very wonderful, a lot of people would like to have contact with us. We would like to share with the world around us how unique and how wonderful we are. We'd like to let the world know some of our ideas. We'd like to tell them how much we love them and how much we feel happy because we have created them in our existence. And so, how do we communicate? I read a beautiful letter from Irene Merkley this morning, and in that letter she tells about her mother, and her mother is in a rest home and in the senior care center, and she's a very special lady. And Irene had a tough relationship with her mother for a while because she loved her, but her mother didn't know how to love her back. And so then Irene started to just plain love her, regardless. She decided she would take an hour every day, no matter what she was doing, and dedicate it to visiting her mother and telling her mother how much she loved her. She did this for a period of 6 months, and during that 6 months, her life did such a flip-flop that she was just utterly amazed. She never realized how much it meant for her to be at peace with her mother. And to be at peace meant that she didn't judge her. She just went there and loved her. She didn't expect anything back. She just loved her. Well, what happened was that all of a sudden, her mother began to think of her as the most important person, and I'm going to say other person in the world, beside herself, the most important other person in the world, regardless of the rest of the family. And everybody was fine. You know, everybody did just, but Irene went the second mile. Irene decided to go and make a tunnel from her beingness to her mother's. And pretty soon the tunnel changed into a big 20-lane bridge, which had traffic going back and forth of love, of joy, of peace and harmony and right action and truth. And the door was just open for her mother to begin to live, which she hadn't done for many, many years because she had been living in a little apartment all by herself, and her children would come visit now and then, but there was no interaction with the world. Well, in the rest home, there became much more interaction with the world. And the mother, without realizing it, was building tunnels and bridges and all sorts of communication techniques, and she even found an old fellow there who was an operatic singer and who would sing to her, and they became the best of buddies. But one of the glorious things that happened was recently a young man came into her life, and he was pushing her around in her wheelchair and taking care of her and being nice to her in every possible way. But how did he find his way to her side? Well, he did something wrong, and he had to pay for that something wrong with 90 days in jail or $10,000 fine or community service. And so the man had no money, and he had no desire to be in jail. So he took community service. And his community service was to go over and assist at the rest home, doing all the little things that needed to be done, and pushing the patients around, all things that you didn't need to have certification for. And so this young man took a special liking to Lydia and began pushing her around. And he did this two or three times a day, and she was in seventh heaven, getting all this attention. And of course, she immediately fell madly in love with this guy. They were mother-son type of thing in a most beautiful, most loving way. And she had built a bridge, and she didn't know she was building it. She had made tunnels, and she didn't know she was doing it. Now, as she does this, as she loves this boy, this man, and thinks that he is a very special person, what's going to happen with her tunnel to her children? What's going to happen to her tunnel to her family? Her tunnel to her family is going to be enlarged or new. She's going to sweep it. She's going to put lights in the tunnel. She's going to put maybe even a bridge between herself and her family and her other children. You see, we are an island, truly, and we have tentacles or tunnels or bridges, whatever you want to call them, leading out from us. And sometimes we haven't used them, and they get dusty and dirty. Sometimes we have, the tunnels are always there, the bridges are always there. It's just that we have to walk across them. We have to use them for communication. We have to figure it out. Like today, we were looking around the house here to see where the telephone lines come into the monastery. Well, there's no place where they come in. Of course, obviously they do. They come in under the house or someplace. And they come from the back connection. But as far as a line coming directly to the house in a box down, it apparently comes underground to the house. Now, our other houses, they're not so sophisticated like this one. They all just come to a pole by the house, drop down into the wires into the house, and just neat. And so to facilitate those wires to do the thing we want them to do would be no problem at all. But this house, we have to figure out what we're doing. So now, all the lines that come into the house, and we have many of them here, they could all ring during our talks in the morning, during our internet talks. And we have Rex on the internet. Everyone knows Rex already, Button and Love, and Sylvia and Ingeborg and Ellen. And everybody says, well, how is Ellen today? I hear that she was doing this and doing that. And we become familiar to our listeners. And we have far more listeners than we realize. And it's wonderful. But I'm an island, and there are no limits to the number of bridges and tunnels that I can make to bring people to the island or for me to leave the island and communicate with the outer world, with people who are not living on my island. Now, to be sure, who lives on my island? Me. Only me. I'm the only one who lives in this body. Now we say there are many entities living in this body. Nope. You are the only one who is using it right now. And if you're not, you better be careful, because you're letting other experiences come in and control your body, and you're not in charge. And did you rent the body for this lifetime? Did you rent the body for this experience? Did you choose to have this body? Did you create this body from bottom up? Mm-hmm. Yep. From the first little cell to the last little cell, it's yours. And it's up to us to take charge of this body. It's up to us to remember that this body is something pretty special, something pretty wonderful, something that is the most fantastic experience we could ever have in the world. And nobody else has a body just like ours. Nobody else has chosen to combine the cells and the genes and the chromosomes and the DNA and all these other good things just the way we have. And I read an article about chickens yesterday. And the article says that back in the 30s, when Roosevelt was president, and he was talking about a chicken in every pot, chicken was a delicacy. Mm-hmm. Chicken was very special, and very expensive. And yes, you ate it once a week. It's a very special treat. And scientists were worried that if you developed the chicken industry to be such a great industry that the DNA and the gene structure within the chickens would mess up. Well, they took two chickens after a series of breedings, and one chicken was very robust, and the other chicken was very anemic. Well, they separated the two. They didn't have them intermix. And the robust one, they just kept robusting it, and it became very robust. And the anemic one just became very anemic. It was anorexic. If you didn't feed it purposely, it wouldn't eat and it would die, you know, as it had no desire to eat and to grow and so forth. Well, these experts of science checked the gene structure within these two creatures, these two breeds, and they found that instead of having the DNA and the genes and all these things become less intensive, less magnificent, you know, the bred out of them, you know, that there are new genes that are coming into place that are developing themselves within the structure of the bird itself to make the bird even more impressive and even more stronger and more wonderful, because this was built into the bulky bird. And the anorexic bird just went bad to worse. And they had to feed it to keep it alive and make it live. And of course, they learned from their experiment what they wanted to know, that inbreeding within chickens did not destroy them. But there was a certain element of surprise in the gene structure of the creatures themselves that caused them to mutate and become more positive and more general and more beneficial. And then, of course, they went on to tell the story of inbreeding in European cultures and different houses of Europe and so on. But that was not the problem. The problem was their immune system did not protect them from certain illnesses, and those are what killed them. And they're doing checks now upon them to find out what really did kill them. And really, you and I say, well, who cares? Well, the point is, they find that it's not the inbreeding that killed them. It was the certain types of illnesses that they had, and the medicines that were given for illnesses. And another thing that they found in these early households of Europe that caused early deaths was purposeful killing, where the brother killed the other brother so that he could have the dukeship and these things, you know. And it was very subtly done, and but this is quite frequently it happened. And they're finding it out as they're investigating into the hair follicles of people that hold these things to tell. I mean, what science does is absolutely amazing. And it's interesting. However, all science is doing, and all science will ever do, is to reaffirm the fact that we are very specially made, and that we have within us the ability to handle any situation we want to when we put the right cause in motion about ourselves. When we put the right cause in motion about what it is that we want to experience, our body is nothing more than a vehicle that we have created, and it is subject to what our mind thinks. And if our mind is going to think beneficial things for our body is going to have beneficial experiences. If our mind is going to think, oh dear, everything is against me, I'm going downhill, everything is tough, then our body is going to respond to that mindset, because that is what the mind is set on doing, going downhill, with this attitude that it builds up for itself. Now, little babies are put in garbage cans and done other stupid things too. And when they're found, they're survivors. You know what I mean? Indians have killed other nations, and then the children were left in the cribs sometimes, you know, were not found. And somehow the children survive. You know, who's taking care of them? How are they taken care of? Do the animals take care of them? Is there some person there who finds them and takes care of them? The stories are graphic and various, but yes. A survivor consciousness. Not that you're surviving terrible things, but you want to live. You think living is great, living is fun, living is beautiful. This builds up the gene structure within us, builds up the DNA programming within us, builds up the positive attitude within us that gives us a wonderful eternal life. And these are things that we do with our bridges and with our tunnels, reaching out into the world, sharing who we are, and always being who we are, and never being afraid that we're lonely. Never being afraid that we have no one to care for us, that our world is just an island and we're separate from the world. Hey, we will never be one with the world. We will always be separate from the world. We will be one with whatever world we create. And whatever world we create is the world we want to be one with. We don't want to be one with a world that has negativities and things that we don't want in us. But we want to be one with the world that is a reflection of our purity and wholeness. So, we have the story in the Art and Science of Wholeness about the bridge builder. It's a common, a very familiar story. And it's about this man who walks this path. And at eventide, he crosses this chasm deep and wide. And he says to himself, I must build a bridge here. So here, though he has already crossed it, he builds a bridge across the chasm. And another traveler comes along and sees the bridge and sees the bridge builder and sees the old man who really should be resting, you know, building this bridge. And he says, oh man, why are you building this bridge at eventide when you've already crossed the chasm deep and wide? And the old man says, along this way, a fair-haired youth will come, and I build this bridge for him. Now, you see, that's a beautiful soul. The bridge was not important. The bridge was not anything, but it was the concept of why he did it that was important. Now, are we doing lovely things that make us feel good? Are we building a bridge at eventide? Even though we have crossed the chasm deep and wide, you know. Have we left behind the need and are doing things for the joy of it, for the pleasure it brings our heart, knowing that someone else will come along that way and will enjoy that bridge, will enjoy the love that we have spread and the way that we have done. We are an island, and we do build our bridges and our tunnels. And we are building them all the time, every time we smile, every time we think a beautiful thought, every time we love, unconditional love, expecting nothing in return. We've got it already, the joy of giving. Have a lovely day and know that with all my heart and soul and being, I like me and I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.